Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Cinemites podcast. Week two of being back, and this time we are straight back in with the bread and butter of the show, the idea that really started all, and that is essentially a Cinematch. I think that's what we call them, right? I can't remember now. It's been that long.
The Cinematch.
Yeah, we're doing a Cinematch. We've got two films that we're going to be pitting against each other this week in a total of seven categories. We decided to reduce the number from 10 because we just ended up waffling way too long. Way too long. Especially these two. We've got a selection of seven categories that we are going to be scoring today to decide which of two mystery movies, which I almost kind of spoiled in the last episode, that we've...
movies, but I have always announced them before people have watched this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be in the title.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it will be in the title. Fuck, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. You can tell it's been like 7 months, really. As you probably know, and if you don't, then fuck it, I don't know how. Because, like you said, it'll be in the title of the episode. We are doing two Quentin Tarantino movies today, Reservoir Dogs versus Pulp Fiction. These will be the first Tarantino movies we've done. And I know we both really like some of his films a lot. And we actually both watched these two movies in particular together recently. And both of them were released in the month of October. So I just thought, it's a nice, fun one to do. It's a director that we both really like. It didn't require either of us going and watching movies that we'd never seen before. So it was a nice, easy way to get back into the swing of things. Like I said, it's the first time we've done any Tarantino movie. So before we get started, I just wanted to check. Have you, when did you first, watch these movies? Is it fairly recently or have they been around for, as long as you can remember?
No, I watched them, when I was... 17, 18, so a while.
Yeah, we are talking yonks ago.
Literally about 17, 18 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. I only actually watched them both for the first time in lockdown, I think. It was a lockdown then. It's the one when I worked for a day and then had to go off 2 weeks, came back for a day and then had to go off another 2 weeks. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah.
But I was confined to the spare bedroom because me and Eleanor both... Well, at first she had it and I was trying to avoid her and then I got it. And then she'd recovered, so I was trying to avoid, keep it away from her. So I was, in the spare room for a month. And I was just watching things I'd never got around to seeing. And I watched them both then in very quick succession. But I think I actually started with Reservoir Dogs. So I started, where he started, because obviously that's Tarantino's first film. He's a directorial debut. And then he followed it up with Pulp Fiction. So it's quite... it's quite a good pairing to go with today, because obviously they were the two that really kickstarted his career, but they're also the two that for many people are still his best as well. I'm not sure if either of us feel that way. I can't speak for yourself, but I know neither of them is my favourite Tarantino movie.
Neither of them is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Fucking right. Fucking right. That's on me. Well, actually, looking at the posters I've got three Tarantino. I've actually got Reservoir Dogs, which I ain't doing that again. Reservoir Dogs is there. I've got Pulp Fiction, which is just out of sight, and then just next to that, I've got Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as well. You could say I'm a big fan of all three, really. But they're very different movies at the same time, so we'll just might as well just get started then and crack on with the Cinematch.
It's in a match showdown. How can you not remember?
Oh, the showdown bit. That's what I forgot. Because I forgot everything. I said to you, and people who watch probably realised the episode looked different the first time because I forgot to change the settings again. So it didn't have a side-by-side and it only shows the person who's talking. So I fucked that up. I was even trying to remember how to use all the software and stuff to edit it all. My memory's terrible. So I was forgetting the buttons I had to press to do certain stuff and it took me way longer than it should have done. So hopefully things will be a bit smoother now.
You want to explain the scoring then?
Yes, I do. If I can remember it. So with each category, we've got seven. With each one, we'll have to decide which movie we think is best in said category, and that will get a 10. And the loser will get anything from a 9 below. If it's close, it'll be a 9. If it's anything less than a 9, it means there's a pretty clear winner. It's essentially as Nathan is fully aware of Just mimicking combat sports and the way they're judged by round. So, like, for example, I'm a big MMA fan. If a UFC fight scored, the winner of a round gets a 10 and the loser usually gets a 9, or if they get their ass fucking handed to them, it's like an 8. But Nathan likes to go with 7s and 6s because he's a piece of shit.
I mean, I don't see the problem with 1 point and no point, but I guess we're sticking to this.
Well, it started that way. We might as well stick with it. And also, it means we get some really random scores instead of just like 3-1.
It means I really get to shit on films again.
Yeah. And also, it means I have to do my best edition, adding up as we go along. It's a good job I'm a fucking whiz at maths. Also, by the way, this has got nothing to do with this, but I'm wearing my fucking new Back to the Future t-shirt and you can't even see it, which is really depressing.
Put your camera down then.
Well, no, because then you just see me fucking crotch and you won't see the background.
Might get more views.
Yeah, maybe. Or I get fucking banned for life. Who knows? But yeah, enough waffling. Let's crack on then. We'll start with the opening to both movies. I'll start with Reservoir Dogs because they both actually take place in the same setting. So the Reservoir Dogs opening is... it's a group of essentially bank robbers, criminals who are putting together a heist, and they're sat in a diner talking about what Madonna's Like a Virgin means. And it really sets the tone immediately for the sort of dialogue that Tarantino's become famous for. It shows these like criminals in a different light. And it's not most films you see them planning these sorts of heists, and in the end, that's all they really talk about. Whereas Tarantino showed them just having that general conversation and laugh. And it paints them as humans first and foremost, which you don't see very often. It's also quite funny, the interactions between all of the characters there. We, like I said, you get that whole back and forth about what Like a Virgin means between a few of the characters. Then you get Steve Buscemi's character and his debating on tipping. And it's just like a really, it's interesting because the film is quite intense, but it just opens like in a really lighthearted manner. And on the flip side with Pulp Fiction, again, it opens in a diner, but it opens with two characters that aren't really going to be seen for much of the movie. And that's a couple who it appears to be just having breakfast and talking about their own experiences as criminals. And where they're, funny enough, they also like to rob. I don't know if that's just a Tarantino thing, but like they were also discussing, but instead of like a bank, they're actually intended to rob the diner that they're sat in, and we get the interesting back and forth between those before it all shit hits the fan. And it's really funny because the female character seems quite like sensitive and almost like innocent, and then as soon as things kick off, she's just like a banshee, like screeching and threatening to kill people. So that goes from like 0 to 100 real fucking quick. But it's just it's interesting they're both set in diners. And one is like a heist and the other is just before a heist. So how did you score this?
I went, as much as I love both, and I do think that both, like you say, set the tone as to the characters and what kind of movie we're getting, I went with 10-9 to Pulp Fiction. I just think they're both good. They're both very wordy. And I think it automatically lets you know that you've got to be a fan of dialogue for a Quentin Tarantino movie. If you're not a fan of dialogue, you aren't going to like these movies. But I think Pulp Fiction pulls it over the line because it's just more iconic. Like that, everybody be cool, this is a fucking robbery line is just ingrained in my, like, I can hear it in my brain consistently. Whereas like I forget a lot of the diner bit with Reservoir Dogs. But I love all of the characters around the table at Reservoir Dogs. So I was tempted to go 10-10, but I'm not going to do that out of the bat. Let's not play those silly games.
Yeah, the very first one.
But no, yeah. Pulp Fiction, I think because you've already, at that point, you will have already seen Reservoir Dogs. You kind of think, well, this is going to be a similar kind of thing. So when it twists on its head and they start talking about robbing the diner, you think, oh, probably they're being hypothetical. And then when they stand on the table and everything, it does fucking hit the fan. I think you just kind of get a real sense of this is a film that you're not going to know which way it's going, and very much you don't know which way it's going most of the time. So I just went Pulp Fiction because it is just more iconic. I think when you think of Pulp Fiction, that's one of the things that you think of.
Yeah, I agree. I went 10-9 in favor of Pulp Fiction as well. A lot, for a lot of the reasons you just said, but I also love the way when they first like get up on the table and the like that iconic line from Tim Roth, and then it kicks into the song by is it, I think it's called Miss Alou, which is just, obviously there's a more updated version, which when I first watched it I somehow thought it was like who is, what's the version, is it like not Hey Ya, but there's like a new like song,
Black Eyed Peas,
yeah, that's the one. And like when I first watched it, I was like, is that Black Eyed Peas? I was like, of course it's fucking us, like 1994. But that's iconic, the way it kicks into that, and then that's how it opens. And also, I think the, not to step on the ending, but the way it comes back around, it like goes full circle. And watching the beginning now, after having seen the full film, if you watch the beginning, there's little like things you see, notice in the background that obviously play a key role later on. So I really like that rewatchability to it. And I do love the opening scene to Reservoir Dogs, and the back and forth there is genuinely really funny. And like you said, that opening dialogue, it's like the perfect introduction to Tarantino and like what he's become known for. So it's really effective. But yeah, there's no getting away from the fact that the Pulp Fiction opening is just fucking superb. So I went 10-9 as well. So we'll go to the ending then, and then we'll just go with the book. We might as well. Pulp Fiction ends where it begins, first of all.
Well, God damn, fucking, let's not do this again.
But so the ending of, I mean, I'll start with Pulp Fiction then, because I've just said it's the end. It's, the film is like, it's very non-linear storytelling. Nothing is in sequence, and the very ending of the movie is the heist that Tim Roth and his, I can't remember the name of the actress, unfortunately, but that their characters,
I say funny bunny, like that's not,
yeah, but what their characters, the heist that they do in the diner and they rob it, that's the ending of the movie. So they're like 2 hours past, and then we finally see that play out. But now we've been introduced to all these characters throughout the story, and we come to realize that like a couple of them are there as well, and it's how they end up dealing with that situation. And you get that really cool monologue from Samuel L. Jackson's character Jules, and then after like deflating the situation, we see the two main characters, I'd say. I know obviously there's a lot of characters and there's multiple stories, but I'd consider Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta to be the two main characters. And you see them two walk away together. They leave the diner, and you see it's essentially like heading off into the sunset. I mean, we know it's obviously not built to last because of things we've seen earlier, but it's a night. It's, I think that that's the best way to do it. And I think because of stuff that happens earlier, even though we know their fates, you still kind of feel a bit better because the end, it ends with him, like with them walking away together. We know it's not going to be for long, but somehow it's, if it had never brought, I keep trying to dance around not spoiling.
Are you okay?
Like, spoiler alert for anyone that's not seen Pulp Fiction. I don't know why you'd be listening/watching.
We need to be talking about the end of the film. Why are you doing a spoiler alert now?
Not just because I was going to mention it in the story later, but obviously the John Travolta's character dies, and then because it's told out of sequence, he's there for the ending, and then you see him and Samuel L. Jackson walk away together. And I think, despite knowing he dies, it's a nice ending that kind of fills you a bit of optimism, despite you knowing it's not going to last. Whereas the Reservoir Dogs ending is a bit more depressing.
Reservoir Dogs ending is fantastic.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But it's like the guys, the majority of the movie takes place in the warehouse, and the ending of the movie, we see this all come to a head, and there's a shootout between several of the characters. We get the police showing up to take on Harvey Keitel, who has killed an undercover police officer. I'll explain more of this in the story. I'm just kind of skating over everything at the minute. And it's like there's a brief standoff, and then you hear the gunshots. You hear Steve Buscemi running away. And there's just all sorts of fucking carnage going on. It's a very, very different ending. It ends on a much more somber note and depressing. But I preferred it. So I went 10-9 in favor of Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, same.
I just think it's the performance, especially from Harvey Keitel at the end, the performance from when Tim Roth's character reveals to him that he's an undercover police officer who he's been vouching for, and he's essentially just killed his friend, the mob boss Joe, because he was defending this kid and then finds out that this kid's actually been lying to him the whole time. And Harvey Keitel's performance in that moment when he's clearly like devastated, and then the police come in and he's facing off with him and he kills Tim Roth anyway, and then obviously he gets fucked up. Just that whole bit, I just think it's incredible. It's really emotional, well done.
Yeah, I think what's good about it as well is that obviously even when he finds out that he's a policeman, he's still kind of like, you can see he's eating him up inside, but he's still kind of protective of him. Like he's not like dropped him, he's still holding him, he's still like there with him until the end, which is like a really fucked up little twist on top of the twist. But I think the best thing about the Reservoir Dogs ending is a lot of it is implied. Obviously, you get the shootout, you get the Mexican standoff, and then you get the Tim Roth revealing that he was a cop. But then after that, the actual full ending is very implied. Like, you don't see the police taking down Steve Buscemi. You don't see him storming the building. You don't see, like, them actually shooting at, or you don't even see the gunshot of Harvey Keitel being mowed down. It's just all very, like, it's sound. And the entire last shot is just focused on Harvey Keitel and Tim Roth. So it's just like you say, it's really, really somber. And it's like, the whole film is a character piece. Like, there's what, three or four locations used: Joe's office, the diner, the warehouse, and then streets. Well, there's a couple of them, but like, they're the main ones. It's all taking place in a warehouse. So you've got to make sure that the characters are spot on. And the ending is a testament to everything that's built up, the tension, like the relationships, everything's built up throughout the movie, and this is where it all crescendos. Like a good ending should, but like, it does it really, really well by just focusing on those characters and not the spectacle, which obviously he does later on in his later movies. He starts to think about spectacle a bit with the violence or whatever. But this one, it's literally just, let's fucking focus on these. And it beats all of his other films, I think, in terms of ending.
Yeah, that's fair. So you think Reservoir Dogs is the best ending, yeah?
For Quentin Tarantino, I think he's one of his, definitely up there, out of all of his films, one of his best endings.
Yeah, when I think about his films, it's hard to argue. Like, sometimes I think he doesn't know when to end a film.
I think as you kind of watch more and more, they get more and more like, we need to have that kind of explosive ending. Like, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a very, very character-driven movie, but the ending is like a very different film.
Yeah, it's way out of left field.
Like, all right, okay, now we've got that Quentin Tarantino here for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, this one didn't need any of that. Yes, it had the shootout, which was really like tame in comparison, but it was so character-driven and so focused on the emotion of Harvey Keitel and the emotion of Tim Roth that it just surpasses everything else.
Yeah, I will say though, how the fuck did Harvey Keitel shoot two of them at once? Because it's two him and it him, and he gets both.
The fastest gun in the West. I don't know.
He's in the wrong fucking business. Should have been an assassin. Like, that motherfucker was a real fucking gunslinger. I don't know how he managed it, but he took out two in one go. I also think with Reservoir Dogs, I think it was fairly cheap in comparison to like the budgets he had for everything else. So there were obviously some major decisions that he made to keep the budget low, and I think that was one of them. But I think it actually helps the film. Sometimes a lack of budget can hurt, like we've seen in the past, especially the first Terrifier. Sometimes with how cheaply made that was, it does hold it back a bit, and I don't think that is the case with Reservoir Dogs at all.
No.
It'll
be 2 weeks in a row we've mentioned Terrifier.
I'm going to see if I can do it every week until Christmas.
Wait. Godzilla. Okay, well, I've got mine, you've got yours.
So we'll move on then to the story in general.
You didn't really say how you felt about the ending to Pulp Fiction.
I didn't, or you didn't?
I didn't, actually. No, you did. You didn't let me, you son of a bitch. It was all right. I liked it.
Yeah, it was good. There we go.
It was good.
If it wasn't, it wouldn't be 10-9. That tells you it's close.
Get me on Variety or The Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah, because we should be on the fucking front lines covering this stuff. but yeah, we'll move on to the story in general then, because I've danced around a bit with both of them. And I ain't doing the full plot because it'll take me forever with Pulp Fiction because it's like fucking 2.5 hours long and there's about four different stories. But this is where the most different because Reservoir Dogs is a very focused story. It's about a group of criminals who rob a bank and it's primarily about the aftermath. We don't see the heist, which again is probably down to budget concerns, but I think really helps as well because you're just going off word of mouth and like listening to the characters' own reflections on what went down.
Actually works loads better because you know everything. If like if you're watching the film and paying attention, you can visualize what happens with the high. You know exactly what's gone off. You can see it in your head without ever having to see it. And that's like, again, dialogue, and it's the perfect way of using it.
And it's so the majority of the film is set in the warehouse with the characters dealing with the aftermath. Obviously, Tim Roth's character is an undercover cop who's working with the group to try take down the boss, Joe. But he gets shot by a civilian. So he spends the majority of the film in there with Harvey Keitel and Steve Buscemi, and they're all just kind of trying to figure out what the fuck went down because the heist went wrong. Michael Madsen's character, Vic Vega, went crazy, started shooting motherfuckers up. And it all just kind of went fucking pear-shaped. And that's essentially the movie. There's a lot of flashbacks, told like essentially to explain how each character kind of found themselves in this situation. And primarily, there's a lot of backstory for Tim Roth's character when it's revealed that he's a police officer. And we see a lot of him preparing for the undercover stuff. Like some of my favorite scenes in the movie are his moments where he's like rehearsing like the fake story he's gonna give and stuff like that. So yeah, and there's obviously the stuff in Joe's office, but again, it's all about this one specific moment, and then there's just a few flashbacks to help you get to know the characters more. So it's kind of non-linear in a sense as well in that way. Like there's a lot of jumping back and forth, which is something Tarantino likes to do a lot. Like we've seen that in a lot of his movies. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood does it an awful lot as well. But Pulp Fiction is more of an anthology, which he's talked about a lot, and it was his desire to do. It was obviously it's like a tribute to the pulp stories in like the 1950s, and there's like the three main stories which follow John Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson as essentially, I think they're essentially like assassins, Vincent Vega and Jules. You are?
Hitmen.
Hitmen. So what, same thing in it, surely. Is it not?
Just use the right terminology, Cal.
Well, I don't know. I did you I'm not the nerd. You probably it's probably like offensive to nerds to get those wrong. I don't know.
I don't know why you call him in.
Looking at all the Star Wars stuff as you say it. I mean, what's that? Is that Captain America's shield on windowsill? No.
Where? There?
I see some shield we red and blue.
Yeah, and what of it?
Is it Captain America's?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. But you're not a nerd, it's cool.
No, I'm cool.
But that's one story. It's following those two and like their work for another like crime boss played by Vic Raines, which is fucking great. And how Samuel L. Jackson's character Jules has some sort of like religious epiphany and starts to rethink his life choices. It kind of breaks off into another story about John Travolta's Vincent and having to take out the crime boss's wife while he's out of town, who's played by Uma Thurman in one of the maybe sexiest characters for a while. Like you see really both sides of the spectrum with Mia Wallace. But the second story follows those two when they go out for food, and that's probably the strongest in a sense that you think it's going one way and it really takes a turn. And then the third is about Bruce Willis, who is a boxer working for the same crime boss. Fucking Ving Rhames got his hands all over the story. And how he's supposed to take a fall for money in a boxing match, but he doesn't. He ends up winning, and then it's about his showdown with the boss. So there's the three really like different stories that take place throughout, and it helps the movie in a sense that it's set in three different it's almost like three mini movies. So how did you find that? Which do you prefer? Like that sort of, did you prefer that, or did you prefer the very focused story from Reservoir Dogs?
I couldn't decide.
Are you 10-10'd it?
I'm 10-10'd it because the two different that I can't differentiate which I like more. because I like the non-linearity of Pulp Fiction and how like the beginning is also the end, and how, like you said, we see people get killed but they're alive later on. And it just, watching it the first time, I can remember it being like, right, okay, I immediately need to watch it a second time, because then you, I feel like you get more out of it. But that non-linearity really helps the story. Like, you see, you know, people's fates, you see things that will connect later on. You're constantly picking up bits, and I think it's so cleverly done that you can't deny it. Like, it's, that's, I can 100% understand why it's the one, the, it's the, it's the Tarantino movie that everybody thinks of. Like, I know there are better ones, blasphemy, I know, but there are better Tarantino movies, but Pulp Fiction will always be the one that is attached to Tarantino's name. And I think the way he decided to film it, the way he decided to play that story out, is extremely, extremely clever. That being said, I also really, really love the focused element of the one location. Like, there's a shot in Reservoir Dogs when Harvey Keitel and Steve Buscemi first get to the warehouse, and they're talking, and the camera's just so far away because they've gone into the bathroom and he's washing his hands, and that camera doesn't move, but they're so far at a distance. It's just a normal conversation, and it's just dialogue that carries that movie. Keep talking about dialogue. It carries that movie, that you don't need all this spectacle, you don't need these tricks, you don't need whatever, because it's so intriguing and engrossing that you just can't help but follow every single move. To the simple act of, like, talking about tipping from a Big Mac Mexican standoff to somebody cutting somebody's ear off whilst dancing. Like, it's all very, like, small scale stuff, and it's so focused that it's just brilliant. And I think the best parts of Pulp Fiction for me are the quieter parts. I don't like the louder actiony parts as much, so I think it's hard for me to differentiate which story I like better. So I wimped out and gone 10-10.
That's fair enough. I actually went back and forth on this, but I ain't a bitch, so I picked a winner. Because I really like, traditionally, I really like focused storytelling, and I love movies that are, like, limited to, like, the one location. Like, The Breakfast Club is one of my favourite movies of all time. I love Saw. Alien is essentially all in one location. The Thing. Like, I love movies like that. And I really like it in Reservoir Dogs as well. But I think, for me, the difference is Reservoir Dogs is maybe about 90 minutes long, and I think Pulp Fiction's about maybe like 2.5 hours. There's like an hour difference, and it doesn't feel like there's that much between them. Like, Reservoir Dogs feels longer than it is, and Pulp Fiction feels shorter than it is. I think it actually, yeah, I think the three stories in Pulp Fiction really, like, I think it helps it move along so, like, smoothly, and I think the runtime actually, like, races by for me. And I love,
I'm completely opposite. I think Reservoir Dogs flies by, like, it feels like 60 minutes, whereas Pulp Fiction, I think, drags on in parts too long. Like, the ending, I think, is too long.
Oh, really?
That's interesting.
Yeah, that is. I don't think I'd noticed it before, but when we watched Reservoir Dogs recently, that was when I really felt, I felt like it was longer than it was. And that was, like, the first time I really thought that. And we obviously rewatched Pulp Fiction recently, and that was one where I was like, it doesn't feel like that much time's passed. Like, I felt like all of a sudden we were at the ending. And I think the three, splitting up into three, like, mini stories helps that. And I think the way each story plays out and subverts your expectations and just goes completely against, like, the narrative, and it changes what's supposed to happen. Like, with the first story with Jules and Vincent, and how these hitmen, not assassins, and how he gets this, like, religious epiphany, and the way they're interacting, and the stuff with the poor bastard in the back of the car, and how it goes from these cool hitmen who really look like two of the, like, most intimidating but, like, suavest human beings on the planet, and all of a sudden we see them, like, really stripped down to, like, these fucking idiots that are having to call for help because they've done the biggest cock up of all cock ups, and, like, how they have to deal with that. And then you've got, like I said, the story with Mia Wallace, and how traditionally in a movie that story would be the hitman has to take out his boss's wife, and then they end up together, and that they have to deal with that. And there are moments where it hints towards that, but it goes completely left field when Mia Wallace, Uma Thurman's character, had like accidentally takes, I think it's heroin, which she doesn't realize. I think she thinks it's coke and sniffs it, and it sends her into an OD. And then you've got like that whole fallout where Vincent's trying to like save her, and he takes her to his dealer's house, and there's that big chaos there. And the way like they take the Mia Wallace character, who at one point looks like one of the most attractive women you've ever seen on screen, then all of a sudden she's just like bloody snotty, pale like corpse. Like it's incredible storytelling. And then to even going on to the Bruce Willis one again, that's something like it's not quite the same. But On the Waterfront is a movie I'd seen like from Marlon Brando, which is about a boxer who stands up to the mafia and doesn't, and he takes the fall like in a boxing match. He loses on purpose to help them out, but then he regrets it and he takes them on afterwards. Whereas this shows Bruce Willis defy his boss and win anyway. And while we think they're going to eventually have this showdown, which they do, it subverts expectations again. And we see them team up as they take on these fucking ridiculously rabid rapist hillbillies with a gimp, which is fucking weird as hell, but awesome at the same time. So again, I think just the way he keeps playing with the viewers and like changing, like taking you into certain places and then completely like leading you like into a 180 when you least expect it. Like he does it on multiple occasions in that movie, and I think it's fucking genius. So I went 10-9 for Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I think like the 180 thing that constantly happens in Reservoir Dogs as well, but on a very smaller scale. Like I think you've got to think in terms of like rewatches. I think probably Pulp Fiction is a better rewatch because there's no kind of like the whole thing with Reservoir Dogs is who is the rat. Like there's obviously a rat. Who is it? And when you know, most films you'd be like it wouldn't be as interesting. But I think with Reservoir Dogs it works, even knowing who it is, because they actually reveal it quite not early into the film, but they don't like hold it until the very last minute, whereas most films would. Instead, they use that reveal as a way to like pad out the story a lot more, like buff up the story and like buff up the tension as well. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying about Pulp Fiction's twists and turns. Which of the three main kind of plot threads is your favorite?
Oh, that's easy. It's Vincent and Mia. I fucking love that section. Like, yeah. It's so good. Like, we're going to get onto soundtrack soon, but there's just that section in particular. It's just like some of the best songs, like in movies. Like, it's just hit after hit. And like, from the moments where it's all like seductive at first and they're both playing it cool, and then there's the stuff in the diner with the dancing, and then how it all goes into chaos later on. It's just, I love that section. But I love them all, but that one is easily my favourite. What's yours?
Bruce Willis's.
Yeah. Is that because of the gimp?
I do love a gimp. You know how much I love a gimp. But no, it's... it's... Well, it starts off with the... what's his name? Why can't I remember his name all of a sudden?
I'm going to guess Christopher Walken.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts off with like Christopher Walken's bit. And it's just like... Fuck's sake, it's so good.
Oh, and he's talking about how he has the watch up his ass for years.
But it leads into like this whole like almost mini like it's such a like optimist story that just really fucks up. Like yeah, he's you know something's gonna happen because everything's going really well for him, even though he's like fucked people over. But it's the fact that it all goes to shit. Literally because he can't let go of the watch, and it's by pure accident that he bumps into him, and it's so good. But yeah, I prefer the Bruce Willis bit.
I should say the Bruce Willis one as well. Obviously, like you said, he goes on the run to get away with after deciding to screw the boss over and make his own money from it, but has to go back for the watch, and that's when he encounters Vincent, who's been sent to kill him, and that's when we see Bruce Willis's character Butch kill Vincent Vega. And at the time, the first time you watch it. I remember the first time I watched it, I was fucking devastated because I thought Vincent was so cool. Like, I was like, oh, that sucks. But like I said earlier, like the non-linear storytelling means that we got to see him again. But the first time you watched that, it was really like impactful. So that is a big moment. And then, like you said, the stuff with the fight with Marcellus Wallace, the crime boss, and then the stuff in the shot with the fucking samurai sword and all that stuff is great. And I think my favorite line in either movie is when Marcellus is talking to when they've retaken the upper hand and they've like they've killed a couple of the guys, and they've got that one who's still alive. I can't remember his name now, but he's like the one that is like the ringleader, and he says he's gonna go medieval on his ass. I fucking love that line. I think it's great. So yeah, they're both. I mean, all three are great segments, but I prefer the middle one. But yeah, I went 10-9 for that. You went 10-9 in favor of Reservoir Dogs. So we've got one last category that we are both aware of.
10 for the story.
Oh shit! Yeah, you did. I thought it was weird when you was like backing me up, and I was like, he said all this, but he went for Reservoir Dogs. Yeah, I forgot. It's good to I wrote it down actually, because I actually wrote down 10-10 as well. You can tell I've been working since 7 this morning.
Always excuses.
There is with me. I never take blame or responsibility. There's always something wrong.
Oh, I don't.
So we've got one more category here that we are both aware of to round out the main five. And then we've got...
What is wrong with you? We've got two left.
Holy fuck. Yeah. What is wrong with me? God, we can never record when I've done a 7 o'clock start again because I'm all over the place. Yeah, we've got two more of the main five.
You know what they are?
You are?
So do you know what they are? Do you want me to do it for you?
The next one is the best cast, because the thing about the Tarantino movie is every single one of them has got a stacked cast. He loves casting like multiple big names and recognizable faces to fill out his stories. And even Reservoir Dogs, which was his debut movie, like I've read this book recently, which was about his entire career, and it goes into depth about every single movie and like the certain ways he got around it at first, like the little deals he were having to make to convince certain people to even get onto this movie is really interesting. Like he had to like badger Harvey Keitel for quite a bit. But he did it, and it's the first Reservoir Dogs, which was his first, is a stacked cast, and it really sets the tone for the rest of his career. So in Reservoir Dogs, we've obviously got like Steve Buscemi, who is low-key, when he's in the right project, he's one of my favorite actors. He's done a lot of stuff more recently, like some of the comedies with Adam Sandler, some of them are really fucking bad. But when he's in the right role in the right movie, I really like him. Like I told you in the last episode, I've been watching The Sopranos, and he is in that for quite a while, and he's great. I really like him. But other than that, we've got Tim Roth, who's in quite a few Tarantino movies. We've got Harvey Keitel, we've got Michael Madsen, we've got Quentin Tarantino himself, we've got Lawrence Tierney, I believe his name is, the guy that plays Joe. And we've got Chris Penn, who plays Joe's son, Nice Guy Eddie, which is one of my favourite names of any character in anything. And then on the flip side, he kind of goes one better in Pulp Fiction, the size, like in terms of the size. Like he starts off with this like cast with not many people around them, but and then Pulp Fiction, he really expands. And we've got Tim Roth again, we've got Harvey Keitel again, we've got Samuel L. Jackson this time, we've got Bruce Willis, we've got John Travolta, we've got Uma Thurman, we've got Ving Rhames, we've got fucking Tarantino again. He loves it, that guy. Fuck, who else have we got? We've got so many. I'm missing someone.
Eric Stoltz.
Yes, that was it. Poor man's Marty McFly. Patricia Arquette is also in it, I believe.
Yeah.
Playing his partner.
I think I told you when we watched it last, Phil Lamar, who plays Marvin, is like a huge voice actor. Like he's been in so much stuff as a voice actor, but like it's so rare to see him on screen. So it's always like fun to see that he's in Pulp Fiction.
It's also got Steve Buscemi in it as well. He plays the waiter in the diner when Vincent and Mira come for food.
Does he really?
Yeah, he plays the one that's dressed as Buddy Holly.
How did I not recognise that?
Yeah, he plays the one that's dressed as Buddy Holly. But yeah, so both movies have got incredible cast. But I think because of the star power and the sheer size, I went 10-9 in favour of Pulp Fiction. Because I think Samuel L. Jackson as Joel is one of maybe my top 10 favourite castings ever. I think he's fucking incredible. And it's interesting because the role wasn't for him originally, but he really like made it his own. And I think I can't imagine anyone else doing it now. And similarly, John Travolta as Vincent, at the time, I mean, I wasn't alive, so I can't testify to it. But like at the time, with the way his career had gone, it wasn't like an obvious choice. And apparently there was pushback and stuff from studios and
Tarantino does best though, isn't it? Like he grabs people that are probably like maybe older film stars or people that aren't as big and just throws them into like celebrity status. Like the same reason I went Pulp Fiction, 10-9 Pulp Fiction, is because Travolta had this career, like you said, this career that was on the downturn, and people still saw him as Danny from Greece.
Danny Zuko, like, my guy.
People still saw him as that. And like Sam Jackson, I've seen in loads of interviews say, like, he, you know, Quentin Tarantino can do no wrong. He can say whatever he wants. He can say a word as many times as he wants because he gave him his career, essentially. And, you know, Uma Thurman, you think of Uma Thurman, you think of two films, this or Kill Bill. You know, Tim Roth as well. Like, he had an amazing run in Reservoir Dogs. But again, it's this film that really put him in the spotlight. And I think that's happened for a lot of films, a lot of the people in the cast. So I think not only is everybody in the cast fucking, I'm going to say it, phenomenal, but it also like redefined how people saw them. People all sort of weren't seeing Travolta as Danny Zuko. They were seeing him as this guy, and they weren't seeing, like, Sam Jackson all of a sudden became like a household name, and Uma Thurman was a household name, and Bruce Willis all of a sudden wasn't that just that diehard guy. You know, most action stars at the time and probably now probably wouldn't do a scene. The Rock would definitely not do a scene where he gets potentially raped by a fucking hillbilly, like whilst wearing a, you know, a fucking ball gag and all that kind of stuff. But these, you know, he did something different, and it really paid off for him. But I think not only is it a better cast, not to say the cast of Reservoir Dogs is bad, because it's still a top tier. Like I said in the last two categories, a couple of categories, you can't have a film all about dialogue and character without the performances being fucking phenomenal, and they were. But in Pulp Fiction, they're just at that higher level. Everything is elevated, and they've got to deal with some fucking absolutely insane situations, and they all just play it straight, except for Sam Jackson, who goes fucking over the top all the time, in a good way, and not in a bad, like, Nicolas Cage way, like, in a good way.
Yeah, you fucking got me with the Nicolas Cage line. Fuck that guy. Yeah, it's like, I think what's telling is, if you look at the Reservoir Dogs cast and you say, who are the standouts? It's Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth, and Steve Buscemi. You can make a case for Michael Madsen as well, but those other three, especially, like, the standouts, and he has all three of them in this movie as well, so he's took the best of that, added it to Pulp Fiction, and then surrounding them with even more talent as well.
Is Michael Madsen in Pulp Fiction?
No, that's what I say. The other three, apart from him.
Oh, right. Yeah, got you.
No, they didn't. I don't know if he was ever actually offered Pulp Fiction. Some people say he was, but I don't know if he was for the...
Well, he's Vincent Vega's brother, isn't he?
Yeah. I'm not sure whether that was supposed to be Vic Vega originally, and they changed it, but...
I remember for years, though, like, they talked about doing a film with the two of them, Michael Madsen and John Travolta, as available.
I'd be there opening night. I'd have fucking loved it.
Even now. Did it take place before Pulp Fiction?
Yeah. Bald John Travolta.
Old John Travolta, who's gone a bit weird.
Yeah, baldy John Travolta and saggy Michael Madsen. It'd be fucking great. And I'd suspend disbelief and pretend they're mid-20s, just because I'd love it. I'd love to watch it. I mean, I wish they'd have done it, obviously, back then. Like, it would have been great, but for some reason or another, they didn't. But yeah, we both went 10-9 in favour of Pulp Fiction then. So we've got one more category that we are both aware of. So to explain that, we've obviously got five main ones, which I think for the most part are going to be ones we kind of use most weeks. We might tweak a couple here or there. Like, for example, these haven't really got one main character. So if for movies that do, we might add that as well. But this week, we've got the five main ones. The last one I'm going to do is soundtrack, because both movies have very, very impressive soundtracks. It's something, again, that Tarantino's become known for. He loves to fill his films with, like, just incredible music, whether it's songs that you recognize instantly or ones that you're not even that aware of, but by the end, you can't get it out of your head. He just loves to put as many, like, impactful songs into his films as possible, and he's done it with both of these as well. So I'll start with... No,
are you okay?
I think
Do you
I'm
want me to talk
dying.
about the songs in the films?
You are.
Do you want me to talk about some songs for you? Are you?
Yeah, you can do the songs actually, yeah.
Oh God! Right. So I think in Reservoir Dogs, you pretty much got two. Like you think when you think of both films, you think of like the iconic songs that come with it and the songs that everybody knows as part of it. I mean, in Reservoir Dogs, you've got two or three. You've got Little Green Bag, which is obviously the main theme with the bass line as they're walking, which is again an absolute iconic shot. And you put that music to it, and I think that solidified that music in history as most people think it's a theme made specifically for Reservoir Dogs, but it's not. And then, of course, you got Stuck in the Middle with You. When he's dancing and cutting ears off, a very jaunty song for a very not non-jaunty moment, and you got Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Suede at some point in there as well. I think it's probably the three most iconic songs in that, but I would only say those first two are the ones that people really think of when they think of Reservoir Dogs. And in Pulp Fiction, like I say, we've got Mizzaloo by Dick Dale, Son of a Preacher Man by Dusty Springfield, You Can Never Tell by Chuck Berry. And Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon. Obviously, oh, who sings that?
That I have no idea.
No, it's the only one I didn't make a note of. But
That's really fucking funny because that's the only song I've got written down here where I don't have the artist next to it. I don't know what the odds of that is. That's quite funny because I haven't got the name of that person, but I've got the name for every other one
remember to write it down going your track record today. But I
that's on that.
think in terms of like both films, music is used effectively, but Reservoir Dogs doesn't use it as much. And when it does, it's massively, massively effective. Whereas Pulp Fiction uses it a lot of the time. There's so many more songs in Pulp Fiction. But I would say that they're the ones that people like really think of with Pulp Fiction. And I went 10-9 for Pulp Fiction. A, because each one of those four songs are placed in like massively, massively iconic moments. And but B, I can't remember if I said A or one, but I'm going B either way. B, I think whenever we've talked about it before, and we've used the term before in the episodes of a needle drop in a movie, like like when a needle drops on a record and the song plays, and a needle drop in a movie is when that happens to something like James Gunn uses a lot in Guardians of the Galaxy, and it's become like a really popular trope now. But whenever I hear the term needle drop, I think of Mia Wallace physically dropping the needle on the film for the music to start playing. And for me, what better way to say that's a better fucking soundtrack than say that's where that fucking term came from? And they are great. Like Mizzaloo's an amazing song. It's like one of the best guitar songs in my mind. And Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon, that scene in itself is perfectly fits the song and what's happening in the scene as well. So I went 10-9 for soundtrack in favor of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I went the same actually. I went 10-9 in favor of Pulp
Get your
Fiction
own
as well.
opinions, gal. Jesus.
I'll tell you why I did it because I fucking love Chuck Berry. How's that?
You know what? I specifically made sure I spoke about Chuck Berry because I knew you'd be there.
That's my guy. Fucking Johnny B. Goode. I love Chuck Berry. Like, I like the soundtrack to Reservoir Dogs, but like you said, it is much more like limited. There aren't as many songs included. Hooked on a Feeling that isn't really recognized for that film anymore. Like it is much more synonymous with Guardians of the Galaxy now. Stuck in the Middle with You though is an incredible moment, and like that is iconic. That's all I think of when I hear that song. And the contrast of the song paired with Vic Vega's scene where he's torturing the police officer and cutting his fucking ear off, and like the way it's playing, and you see the camera follows him out to his car and it goes quiet, and then as it comes back in, it's playing again. Like I just think it's genius. But Pulp Fiction's just got it's just there's so many more options which really helps its favor. Like Son of a Preacher Man's an incredible song anyway.
Yeah.
Like it's just great. You Can Never Tell by a Big Chucky B. We fucking buzz off that. Like there's three Chuck Berry songs that I love. Johnny B. Goode, Run Rudolph Run, and You Can Never Tell. And just so happens that all three of them were in some of my favorite movies of all time. So if a movie's got Chuck Berry, I'm fucking all in.
Star box rate it.
Well, Pulp Fiction is 5 stars, first of all. So and I think all three of them are. It's Back to the Future, Home Alone, and Pulp Fiction. So,
What a fucking trio.
I know, yeah, all very similar. Obviously, "Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon" is a great song, and that scene when she plays it in the house, it's so iconic. Like, it's just, you don't see what's coming essentially. Like, you don't really know where it's going at that point. And that, it sounds like when she plays the song, it sounds like she is setting the tone for what is going to be like more like of a seduction, and then obviously everything goes tits up. The opening with Vizzaloo is incredible. Like, it's like I said in the when we talked about the beginnings earlier, it is one of my favorites. Like, the way it just, they get up and it kicks into that, it's so like high octane and it's like so effective. I also had "Let's Stay Together" by Al Green because I like Al Green. That's a good song. And "Jungle Boogie," which is also a good song. I just think he does a really, really good job in Pulp Fiction with the music he uses.
Think Pulp Fiction is up there as one of his best soundtracks as well.
Yeah. And I think it's up there with best soundtracks for maybe most films, to be honest. Like, it's not conventional music. It's not like the biggest songs at the time or stuff like that. It's just like, he's like, now we might not think like that because we've watched this film so many times and we love these songs and we love the movie. But at the time, I'm not sure how many of these songs people were like, oh, that's so and so, like off the top of their heads. I don't know how niche they were at the time. But he's done that on multiple occasions where he'll just dive into his fucking bag and he'll just get some absolute anthem out of nowhere. And it's like, yeah, fucking right. Well done, QT.
With Mizzaloo, I don't know if you remember the like the proper like oval MP3 players that you just have like three buttons and a
Yeah.
little LED screen. But I had that on there along with other songs, mostly Green Day. But I had that on there, and the version I had,
This
the
one you actually
release.
Black Fringe.
That's not why. Well, everybody has a phase in something. At least mine was healthy. Well, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I was depressed. But.
No,
I
it's
just
just like wine.
haven't got the Black Fringe anymore. The version that I had was it was Mizzaloo, but the opening had like the everybody would be cool, this is a robbery, none of you fucking prick moves. And as soon as he says over it, I'll execute every last motherfucking one of you, it kicks into the song. So like even when I listen to that song on Spotify now, a whole new world of technology, and it doesn't have that opening. I still hear it in my head. So that I think that is a testament to how synonymous that song is to that film.
Yeah, 100%. I think they all are at this point, which I think really sets it apart from Reservoir Dogs. Because, like you said, "Hooked on a Feeling" is kind of been taken by Guardians now.
Yeah.
So that's
I do
a.
think that, like, the two main songs you have, "Stuck in the Middle" and "Little Green Bag," are they might use music less, but I literally can't think of anything other than those two scenes when I hear those two songs.
Yeah.
So he does the exact same thing but with less music.
Yeah, and we've got to stress that opening one with the when they are walking out of the diner, like that's incredible. Like, none of their men have ever looked cooler in their lives than that scene. They all looked fucking awesome. It was
Yeah,
great.
Tarantino only did that scene so he could fucking look cool for once in his life.
Yeah. So that's our main five. Do you want to go first with your category that I don't know? Because what we decided to do is we're going to come with a category each every week, which we're not going to tell the other person what it is. So we kind of just have to freestyle it on the
Yeah.
spot of our ratings.
Well, the idea behind it was that, like, this is a cinema, like, we're supposed to be head to head, really. Like, the idea is we're putting two films head to head, but we never actually go head to head. We just talk about our opinions. But
Until we
this
do
time,
the fucking battle, not battle royals,
but right,
category
now they,
carnage.
yeah, that's true. But
I'll never forgive
this,
you for taking the fucking Superman score.
but this is kind of our chance to surprise each other with a category. So literally,
Spanner in the way.
not to prepare anything like that. So I'm going with which Quentin Tarantino performance do you prefer?
That's really funny, actually. I think I'd go with, off the top of my head, Pulp Fiction. Because I think there's more to it. And I think he is, he's not more of a, there's both characters are obviously quite like paper thin. Like, there's not really much depth to either of them. But aside from the scene in Reservoir Dogs where he talks about the Like a Virgin song and like what it actually means. There's not really much else to that character because he's killed off during the heist, and we don't spend much time with him. Whereas one of the main stories in Pulp Fiction, he spends a large portion of it there, and it's like seeing him interact with like Harvey Keitel, and like he's just like when he's like trying to mock Jules and Vincent when they're wearing his clothes, and he's like, it's like he doesn't get the joke because he says it like dorks, and like we're wearing your fucking clothes. Like I love all that stuff, and like the fact he's just like willing to help them, and like he's when he's like kind of stressing about giving up the bed sheets because of like the good ones that he his wife loves and stuff. I just think there's much more to that character, and he's much funnier. So I went with I'll go 10-9 with that.
I go 10-9 to Reservoir Dogs.
Really?
Yeah, because he's in it less and he gets killed. I love Quentin Tarantino movies. I hate when Quentin Tarantino turns up in his movies. Like, I think I do think as well, like it's, with him, it needs to be shorter and sweeter. Like when he's in these films, he needs to be short moments because I feel like he likes to get carried away with like inserting himself in a bit too much. And with Pulp Fiction, there's like it's just it. There's a lot of words that he probably shouldn't say, and he gets
That's
away
very
with.
true.
That is very true. And I mean, he does say him in Reservoir Dogs as well, I'm pretty sure. But it just like his bits seem to go on and on and on in Pulp Fiction. And while some of it is funny, like the bit when he's like, yeah, spray him down there, like spray him again with the hose a bit, it just seems really, really cringy. Like it just doesn't, it's like that's very clear he's inserting himself. Whereas with Reservoir Dogs, it's easier for him to do because he's literally just sat around a table chatting shit to people. And he probably didn't even. I would, if somebody was to tell me he didn't script that bit about Madonna and just started fucking talking, I've seen him in interviews, I'd believe it. So it just feels way more natural for him to do. But I don't like it when he inserts himself in the movie. So I went 10-9 to Reservoir Dogs.
That's fair enough. I don't think he was originally supposed to do the Pulp Fiction one. I think he had someone cast who dropped out last minute.
No, that explain it.
But have you ever seen From Dusk Till Dawn?
No, it's on my Halloween list.
He's good in that, actually. I don't think he's a good actor either. And in these two, he does
Is
come across
it
very.
the film where he scripts that Selma Hayek drips a drink down her leg and he sucks it off her toes or something?
I got no comment on that.
Okay,
He's also like a sadistic serial murderer slash rapist, I think. So
cool.
he's a lovely man.
A
But
lovely man with a lovely man with a foot fetish.
yeah, he's convincing in that. Oh, that's all I'll say.
I don't get feet fetishes. Just to go off topic for a second, our friend Moth has got a foot fetish, and
Does
I'm putting it
she?
on. Yeah, putting it on camera so there's no denying it. And I just don't get it.
First of all, and all, I want to just cut in where you said our friend, your friend. Foot fetish, that's weird. No, I don't get it either. I don't get that at all.
He doesn't get that. You don't get that in the these couple of movies, but yeah, I know it comes later in his. I think he sometimes writes it in scripts just so he can get people's feet out.
Yeah,
Anyway,
no.
what's I go back to yours. What's yours? I went off topic.
Mine's actually quite similar to yours.
Okay.
Mine was your favorite Vega brother.
Ooh. I'm gonna go with Vincent Vega. That's Pulp Fiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, actually, oh, I don't know. Oh, you st might have stumped me there.
That might be the only downside to doing this is that you have to
Yeah,
think about it, and it's just minutes
no,
of fucking dead air.
I'm committed to it. But I do like I can't remember his fucking name in Pulp Fiction.
Vic.
Vic Vega, yeah.
No,
I
in
do.
Reservoir Dogs, you mean?
Yeah. Out of the two characters that get enough backstory, it's him and Tim Roth's character. So I like that you get more of a look into him and a bit of his backstory, but he is essentially just a bit one note. He's a bit like a like he's got something to prove, whereas Vincent Vega is very like, I love that, you know, the bit in the Royale with cheese bit, and he's like he's just kind of nodding along, and he's like, you can tell he enjoys his friendship slash working professional life. And I like that you're supposed to think he's very competent, but he's very not competent at all. Like all the stuff with Mia Wallace and the stuff where he gets killed, like it's because of his incompetence, but he's presented as this like badass character, and he's just funny. Like again, like with John Travolta, I'm not a huge John Travolta fan, but to imagine that he was most famous for playing Danny Zuko, and then all of a sudden he's this character, and this is now how I see him forever and always. Like it's just a, I think it's a testament to how he played that character.
Yeah, that's fair. I really like both, so that's why I picked it. I think it's really fucking hard, but I actually went with Vic Vega in Reservoir Dogs because it's kind of what you touched on there when you said you think of John Travolta as Vincent Vega now, and I, for the most part, do as well. But John Travolta's got quite a few like iconic roles, like he has Danny Zuko in Grease. He had Saturday Night Fever. He's done multiple movies. He's in Carrie, the original Carrie. It's obviously not a big role, but he's in Carrie. Whereas Michael Madsen is in, he's in several movies that I've seen, like high profile movies like Donnie Brasco and Kill Bill and The Hateful Eight. But I will never ever watch a movie where he pops up on screen and not immediately think, oh look, it's fucking Vic Vega. Like he's so synonymous with it. And I also think the character is he's so effective in the role. Like there's times where he comes across really charming. Like the scenes when he's in Joe's office and he's play fighting with nice guy Eddie and he's talking to Joe about how long he spent all this time in prison and didn't rat him out. Like he seems like a really nice guy. But then when you see him again with the you hear about him first going mad at the heist and like they paint this real fucking scary image of him. And then he's just like when he first gets to the warehouse and we kind of just pan out and he's just in the background with his fucking drink. Like he just seems like the ultimate cool guy. And then when he's left alone with the police officer, we see this homicidal psychotic side that other people have been talking about in the film beforehand. And there's a line when I can't remember exactly, but when he's talking to the police officer, and he's about to start torturing him. And the police officer's like saying, "I don't know anything," and he says something like, "You're gonna tell me all this, and about there's no point because I'm doing this because I want to like torture you." And he cuts his fucking ear off, and he's gonna set him on fire. Like I just think the character goes like he goes through all these different, despite him not really having that much time on screen because it isn't a long movie, and he's killed off short like before the final showdown. But in those three key moments, like the showdown with Harvey Keitel as well, when they're like they're mouthing off each other, he shows like these different sides of his personality so well. And I love Vincent Vega, and I love seeing his character get stripped back from the really cool hitman at first to the guy who accidentally kills a motherfucker in the back of the car, and then has to deal with that. And like his little bitchy attitude when he doesn't like taking orders, and the fact he's always on the fucking toilet, like that guy is always on the toilet.
Can relate to that.
I do love him in that. It's probably my favorite John Travolta role, but because I can only really think of Vic Vega whenever I think of Michael Madsen, that's why I've gone with Reservoir Dogs. Which
That's fair.
means
That's fair. And at points when you were talking, I was like, I might change my score, but then I thought, fuck you, I'm not giving you the satisfaction.
that would have made things interesting, but we've got the final score then. Which way do you think it went?
I'm pretty confident Pulp Fiction has probably tipped the scale, but maybe Reservoir Dogs give it a good run.
Yeah. So the final score is in fact 136 to 131 in favor of Pulp Fiction. So there's
To be fair,
5 points between it.
that's a big gap considering how
Yeah.
usually close it is.
Yeah, I'm surprised actually. Because if you'd have asked me before which film I preferred, I'm not sure I'd have said Pulp Fiction. I don't know which film I'd have said. But then when you actually break it down like this, it's really surprising. But yeah, Pulp Fiction is quite a clear winner by 5 points, which.
Well, I think my for my score is it erred on the side of Pulp Fiction anyway, so I was kind of expecting it.
Yeah, mine did too, to be fair.
But I love both equally in very different ways. Like I said
Yeah.
before, Pulp Fiction's like an anthology, like you said, but I like the one no like one location kind of aspect of like the character-driven aspect of Reservoir Dogs. So none are losers, except for Reservoir Dog, which is actually a loser.
They've got the participation award.
Yeah, thanks for trying. Reservoir.
I love both films. I think if I had to pick my favorite three Tarantino movies, both of them would be in it, I think.
Underneath, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, that's my number one. I'm obsessed with that movie. Is that your favorite as well?
Yeah,
Yeah.
But I love Inglourious Basterds and Django as well.
Yeah.
I think the only two I've not seen is Jackie Brown and Hateful Eight, which I really need to get around to watching.
Hateful Eight's good. Hateful Eight's really good. Jackie Brown's decent. It's a bit underrated. Good Samuel L. Jackson performance, but Hateful Eight I really enjoy.
I've got it.
In
I've got
Death
it.
Proof, then.
Oh no, I've not seen Death Proof. No, I need to get that
Yeah,
watched too.
that's probably his worst. That's like the one where it's like this guy really fucking loves feet.
One that I actually really don't like is Kill Bill Volume 2.
Really?
I don't like it. I just don't like it.
But do you like the first one?
I love the first one.
Well, that must be disappointing for you then.
It's very disappointing for me.
When do you think we'll get his last film? Because he reckons the next one's the last one, doesn't he?
Well, I know he's gone back on it now, hasn't he? Didn't he say it might not be his last one after all? He doesn't want to stop making films.
I don't know. That last I heard, it was his last one still. And he had that. There were talks that it was going to be. He had an idea and he was working on it, and then he just scraps the idea, and now we just don't know anything, which is really sad.
Was weird that moment in time, and I still think he might be still developing it, where he's making a Star Trek movie. Like,
Yeah, that's weird.
I can't think of a more weird choice for a Star Trek movie than Quentin Tarantino.
If Quentin Tarantino's final ever film was a Star Trek movie, I'll be fucking so depressed. That'd be the worst way for him to go out. Like, finally going into franchise work and it's fucking Star Trek.
But I bet it'd be like proper old school, like love for the 60s, and not
Yeah.
a very, it wouldn't be a modern story, I don't think. Not at all.
No, probably not. Well, that's that then. Before we finish, a quick question for you, talking about Tarantino's last film. If you could cast anyone that he hasn't worked with yet to do his star in his last film, who would you pick?
Think it'd have to be somebody. It'd have to be somebody who's was a big name, but isn't anymore. While I'm thinking, so we don't just have a lot of dead air, why don't you tell me what you think?
Oh, I ain't got a fucking clue. I just thought that off the top of my
Oh,
head, so I ain't got an
I
answer.
was
I don't have an answer. I just caught me off the top of my head. It's a tough one, though. It is a tough
Well,
one.
usually people have answers to questions before they ask it. No idea here.
Was.
I'd like to see what he could do with Mark Hamill, because Mark Hamill again is very known for one thing,
Yeah.
and see Mike in a different role. But I think Mark Hamill, that's not a like a trajectory Mark Hamill would do.
Yeah,
I
it'd be
think
tough. I think I'd
maybe,
like Matt Damon.
yeah, or.
You'd probably have to get someone who can carry the dialogue, like is comfortable giving those lengthy
Do you
like
know,
monologues and stuff.
it'd be really interesting to see him work with Jackie Chan.
Yeah, that would be. Because he loves that, so like that era of movies and that
Yeah.
genre.
Jackie Chan went through a period of wanting to be a bit more serious. So I would love to see what Quentin Tarantino and Jackie Chan could do.
Yeah.
Not that Jackie Chan is a failed actor or is not successful at all. He definitely doesn't need it, but it'd be interesting. I bet. Well, Maya Hawke's already been in one of his movies, hasn't he?
Yeah, she was in Once Upon a Time. There
Yeah.
was obviously those rumors that they were going to do Kill Bill Part 3 and she was going to be the daughter and bring Uma Thurman back. Something like
Yeah,
that.
I'm surprised they haven't done that, to be
Yeah.
honest.
I'd also like to see him work with Will Smith. Because obviously Will Smith was originally supposed to be Django and turned it down.
Yeah, can you imagine that movie? It'd be
I'm
like
glad they didn't do Will Smith.
the worst Wild Wild West sequel ever.
Oh, that great movie, Wild Wild West.
The yeah.
Movie that only Josh Mason likes.
Fucking loser.
Anyway, that's enough fucking waffling.
Yeah.
But that brings another episode to an end then. That was good. Thought we did a good job there. Pulp Fiction better than Reservoir Dogs. Who knew?
We did.
Yeah, now we do.
Now we do. It's official.
Yeah. So
Tarantino.
next week's episode will actually air on Halloween. So I'm sure we'll cook up a spooky themed episode for you guys. I actually don't know if we've already arranged because my memory's shot to bits these days.
Casper versus the Poltergeist.
What was that?
Casper versus Poltergeist.
I actually watched Casper yesterday.
I fucking thought you did.
Fucking love Casper. With Christina Ricci, the 90s one, it's fucking great. I love it.
I wondered where you were going to go with that when you said Christina Ricci. I was like, mate, she is a child.
No, absolutely not. That'd be disgraceful. Hey, that's your goal. That's what you said, anyway. Yeah, so I don't know. Did we actually come up with an idea for the Halloween? Because I can't remember.
We had an idea, but I don't know if we do it.
Okay. You'll have to remind me whatever that was, because I can't remember. Shit, lie for me.
I am shocked.
Huh?
I am shocked.
I know, yeah. I think I'd like to say it's because I'm getting older, but I'm still way younger than you.
Cheers, mate.
I think your memory seems to be holding up better than mine. But yeah, so the next episode will be airing on Halloween, 1 week from now. Very exciting times. Love the spooky season. And I also love that means from the week afterwards, I'm all Christmas.
No, fuck it out.
I booked a week off work. I booked from the 4th of November to the 10th of November. I'm going home for a couple of days first to see my family. I'm getting back. The decorations are going up and I'm Christmas movie in it. So I'm going to be all in by fucking November.
We aren't doing Christmas movies till December, fuck yourself.
That's devastating, but I understand. I'll watch about fucking 80 by then, so it's fine. But yeah, thanks for watching, guys. And we shall be back for spooky season, Halloween time.
Or thank you for listening, whichever you
oh,
do.
Yeah, and listening, if you're blind.
For fuck's sake.
Peace out.
See you later.